Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Deutsche Link Couch Show. It has been a minute since we recorded, but a lot of things have been going on. But we are back, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Italian and German teams' Champions League and Europa League journey so far, along with. But first, we're going to start off with something that has caused a lot of controversy, if you will. This past weekend, Juventus took on the Seahorses of Salernitana, and there was a moment where Candreva gets fouled, and apparently the penalty was not given. And there's just, and then right now, there has been rumors speculated that there will be a rematch of that game because, or they may just end up playing it from the spot where the foul was taken. In my opinion, they should just start from scratch or just start from where Candreva was fouled because in the long run.
Hold on, don't, that's not the sorry. That's not the that's not where the controversy starts though. It's the controversy that was ignored. I just want to give you the full story so you can have a thing. So Kondreva's fouled, penalty is given. He's fouled, he goes to the ground. Cuadrado cuts into the box, he's fouled, which it was a penalty. They give a penalty. Bonucci scores to make it 2-2. And then Milik scores a game winner several minutes later. Then after the game winner, a fight breaks out. Fazio's red carded. Cuadrado's red carded. Milik is red carded. Allegri is red carded. And then after the winner, quote unquote, they check the goal and it's disallowed. The controversy that's being come from approached is because the Milik's goal should have counted and it didn't. That's where the pushback is from. So I just wanted to let you know that's the situation they're looking at. They're not really looking at the Kondreva one because it was ignored to begin with. So I just want to give you the whole picture.
Okay, now that I got the full context, first and foremost, I went to a fight and a football match broke out, but that's always the line that goes around these days. But yeah, the Milik goal should have counted, but obviously with just everything that has went on in the match, there was a lot of controversy and just there was like heated tension in that match. Obviously, it's a terrible situation that Milik's goal was disallowed when it should have counted. And I think there's just a lot of unfairness in some situations, such as this. And I do think that they should replay the match from the time that goal was like happened. But to go and replay a whole entire match is kind of overkill, if you will, because you really just need to go back to those last few moments where everything really kind of set off, and it's just a really terrible situation.
Yeah, you can't replay this match because if you replay this match, then you have the whole argument about this match and this match and this match that in the past that was worsely, I guess more drama or not more drama, more controversy in other matches. This isn't the most controversial match in football history or Italian football history. So if we're gonna replay this match, then you have a point to say against all these other highly controversial matches in the past were not replayed, so they can't play replay this one. Now, this is the criticism is coming from the Juventus side, not from the Salernitana side, obviously for obvious reasons. Juventus can be angry and outraged that stood, but they cannot cry and they cannot whine about the result because number one, and I talked to Nico about this. He's kind of with, like, he understands that the goal at the end should have counted, What he said to me is they played like shit anyways, so they didn't deserve to win regardless. But if you're going to do this, the reason they can't really cry and complain and scream outrage is because Kondreyev is fouled before your penalty. If the call is correct in saying that Kondreyev's foul is called, then it's a free kick in the other direction. If it's a free kick in the other direction, Cordardo doesn't go into the box and get taken down. If he doesn't go into the box and taken down, then the third goal doesn't happen, probably. So they probably lose. So because the Kondreyev call was ignored, I don't think they can really say anything because that changes the outcome of the game, because they get their penalty and score 2 seconds later after the Kondreyev foul. If the foul was called, if it is called a free kick for Salernitana, then the ball goes the other way and Juventus probably doesn't get an equalizer. Maybe they still score that goal at the end, but it would have been to tie the game instead of to win the game. So my big takeaway here is just based on the information and based on the various things that happened, you can't really scream outrage or ask to be replayed because of the foul that was ignored that would have changed the outcome of the game if it was called correctly. And then a second thing, obviously, the big fight breaks out. Three, four red cards happen. The Milik one I found kind of hilarious because Milik was already on a yellow card. He scores what he thought was the winner, and he was given another yellow card for taking his shirt off. And then they check the review, and the goal doesn't count. So he basically got he got a red card for celebrating a goal that didn't even count to begin with. But I think everything stems from the Kondreyev point. Anything after that doesn't matter because that part of it was already was ignored. The goal should have counted, but because of what happened with Kondreyev, I don't think anybody can truly complain about what happened in the end. But it was crazy, especially the amount of cards that were just being thrown out of the pocket.
So basically, ladies and gentlemen, it was an Oprah moment. You get a red card. You get a red card. Everybody gets a red card. But yeah, it was just a crazy situation from the start after the Kondreyev situation. But it's just one of those situations where they just need to move on and deal with what has happened. So, okay. Anyway, now let's jump into the nitty gritty of this whole episode. We are going to be talking about the Italian and German teams of the Champions League. We are currently in match day 2 of 6 for the group stages. So I'll just kick things off and get my boys Inter out of the way. They took on Victoria Plzen.
Pilsen,
okay. So Inter had struggled, obviously, against, I do believe it was Bayern we had the first round. But in this match, they really came back and really got, at least they got some points from this one. Obviously, everybody in our group stages, Barcelona, Bayern, and Inter will get points from Victoria Pilsen. And obviously, this continues with that because I believe Barcelona also won their match against them the week prior. So Inter started off red hot and was able to maintain possession of the ball. Obviously, they got two goals, which in my opinion, is a good thing, but against a team such as this, you could be at least scoring a lot more. But I heard it's obviously a Serbian. People are giving him praise already for his contributions in the match, but I mean, it is against a very weaker team, and I will really be keeping my eye on him more when we face other teams such as Bayern again, Barcelona, and even within the league, like against Juventus, Roma, Lazio, Milan, and the like, because those will provide more of a challenge for him and seeing where he like will contribute in those situations. But I mean, 3 points compared to none last week is huge. It's just a situation where I feel kind of bad for Victoria because they just ended up in a group of death and they're pretty much the ones that are going to be killed. But I hope at least they get some points somewhere just so they don't go away empty-handed. I mean, yeah, they won't make it past anything, but at least to say you didn't get slobber-knockered would be just, like, better than just getting 0 points at all. But for me, this is a very decent start for Inter so far, especially coming off a hard match against Bayern last week. But now we look ahead to Barcelona. I do think we will get points off of them, but we would just have to continue working hard and really putting in the training sessions and really keeping an eye on those tastes, as they say. Learning the figure out the weaknesses, but overall, I'm very happy with this result, even though it is against a weaker side.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but I think Pilsen isn't just some 11th guys that they just picked off the street and put into a team. They're a team that's in Europe all the time. Now, do they go anywhere in Europe? No, but they're always there. And a lot of teams can't say they're always in Europe in some capacity. I think Pilsen would wallop Lecce, for example, and it took Inter, 97 minutes to get a winner there. So as far as the Acerbi part, I think it's obviously he needs to perform more. He needs more, obviously, performances to validate it further. But I do think that is a genuine performance because it's the Champions League. There's no easy games. And, you know, I would say Victoria Pilsen is in the same level or class of a Shakhtar Donetsk, which is a team that Inter has historically struggled with in the Champions League.
Not Shakhtar.
All I'm saying is they're in the same class of team as Shakhtar. Now, is Shakhtar better than Pilsen? Yeah, they are. But I think Pilsen is still a team that could have done something in a different group. It is just it is the fact that we're matched with Barcelona, Bayern, and Inter. That's the big problem. Obviously, a week before that, Barcelona went wild in against Pilsen. So yes, Inter get the points. I think it's value for the points that they got. But it wasn't the most majestic or. You're not going to look at that performance and say to yourself, "Oh, see, this is why we're going to win the league." You know what I mean? It was a good performance. They got the job done. And I'm not saying Dzeko and Dumfries aren't allowed to score goals, but if you just look at the goal scores from the game of that game, it was people who you would probably not your number one, you know, or I say this nicely. They're sub players usually. Dumfries plays, he starts games occasionally. Dzeko will get to start games occasionally. But they're not the type of players that are the first team on the sheet. But you know, I think it was important. Barcelona is going to be tough. Now, regardless of what I said about them, and it's well documented what I've said about them, but their squad is still very strong. Without Robert, are they this? They're not not nearly as dangerous, but obviously Robert is going to be there, so it's a moot point. And again, they didn't win this week against Bayern. They got beat, but they did. It is Bayern. It's not some team from I don't know Israel or something. So it is going up against the very best in Munich as well. And they did look very good in large portions of that game. So the fact that Inter could only put two past Pilsen, I think, is a little bit concerning. It's not the type of performance that makes some sort of statement to say, oh, this team is this, that, or the other thing. This is because, you know, I think there's plenty of criticism that can go around to Inter, as well as everybody else. But Inter isn't who we thought they were. But in fairness, no one in Italy is who we thought we were. And I said this the other day. It's not that we're all really great teams and we're very competitive. We all kind of suck at the moment. You know, we're just as bad as everybody else right now. And I think the performances in the Champions League by the Italian teams need to kind of go into the way they play in the league. And I think it gets the job done. It's nothing to sneeze at. It's 3 points. You get the points you're supposed to get. And now you have a set of challenges in front of you. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it is Barcelona twice. So you play Barcelona home, Barcelona away, and then you don't come back and play Bayern and Pilsen until the end of the group. So it's two games in a row against Barcelona. And that is the place that will emotionally test this team. Now, I love it. I can't say love to someone who coached Lazio. I like Inzaghi as a coach. He cries like a little baby, but his football is very pragmatic and very attractive. I think when he went with the back five at Inter, I didn't think it was going to work like Conte, and it didn't work like Conte, but he just does it in a different way, and I think it's very effective. I think his team is very deep, but what I do think they lack is Champions League experience. Especially going deep in competitions. And you look at the Barcelona team, there are guys with Champions League finals. There are guys with who's played with the top of the top of the top. So that's kind of my concern with the Barcelona. And Robert is a tough man to stop. Only his own can really take him out. And we saw that again in Munich. But, that's a tough sort of thing to go into. And, you know, if Inter play well and everything goes well in the league and then they go into that game on momentum, it's important. But that's two in a row as far as what we're going to see. And by that time, hopefully Lukaku's back. Do you have an idea when he's coming back or if he's back at all? Or if it's in the near future, or do we have to wait 6 months? Do you know at all?
I don't remember the extent of his injuries, but I know – it should be maybe within the next few weeks, I would assume.
So international break, and this week and then international break probably gone, but he probably should be ready for Barcelona. So getting that the core of the team back will be important as well, and so on. What are you feeling about? Barcelona is going to be tough, but having to play them two games in a row. As far as kind of defining your entire group, how do you feel about that challenge? And what do you think Inter's best bet is to get to where you want to go? That sounded like really stupid, but you get what I'm saying.
Facing Barcelona 2 weeks in a row is not going to be an easy thing to do. Obviously, the home fans are going to be crucial in that scenario. But then you also have to take it from, okay, what do we need to do tactically? Obviously, Inzaghi really doesn't do much in way of changing formation. So your best bet is hope that it's at some point that Lukaku and a lot of your people are back to full strength and you use some of your stronger players. That will be step one. Number two would definitely be keep possession of that ball, because we've seen Barcelona before where if they get possession of the ball, they're the ones who usually will dictate the pace of the match and will usually maintain the possession throughout the whole entire match, which will make things difficult for Inter to get certain goal opportunities going. Number three would be silence Robert Lewandowski and maybe one other key player on Barcelona who you know is like going to be a major threat to your success. And then, of course, the first and, of course, last but not least, but still the most important one, is just go in there with that lion mentality. Like, You have to hunt these points, or else you're going to be exiting the group stage faster than you could say Quidditch. But, I bust out my Madam Hooch for that one. But, I mean, because if you don't go in with that lion winning mentality, it's just going to fall apart really, really quickly. But besides those things that I could think of off the top of my head, it's just basically making sure to silence Robert Lewandowski, make sure to keep up the possession and keep up the pressure, and, of course, have that winning mindset.
All right, so a few things I want to unpack there before we move on. So just question, would you feel comfortable pressing them? I don't know what the next game is, but would you feel comfortable pressing them from the start? Knowing what you know about what Robert can do and what you obviously Rafinha out wide, you got De Jong in the middle, and you have Pedri is, again, I always say that Wirtz is the best youngster in the world at that age group, and it's not even close. Pedri's pretty close, to be honest. He's in the same class as Musiala, Bellingham, and Wirtz. He can make a big difference. But so given what you know about their squad, would you feel comfortable pressing them from tip?
Normally, there are certain matches where you want to play more of a reserved approach, but in this case, you really want to be pressing them, especially since this is the only other team that you could possibly know you could get points off of. So pressing them from the get-go would be, and getting that advantage early would be crucial.
Okay. So given that, if you're going to press them, would you double Robert? Or do you think that the approach is just press like crazy and hope, I don't know who's going to be in goal. That's a whole nother issue. But whoever is in goal can handle what's being thrown. Or do you press them and try to double Robert? So basically, I think it comes down to if you're gonna press them, would you double Robert or would you double Robert and not press?
I would try to press them.
Okay, then that's fair. Hopefully by that point, Lukaku will be back and Martinez, who I thought played pretty well. And Barella, I think Barella's role in this is important because he's a box to box, he needs to make sure everybody in front of him is pressing. He should be the only midfielder, not sitting back, but he should be the last point before the defense. So he needs to make sure his entire squad is pushing forward, or you have someone else. Actually, Brozovic probably sits back and everyone thrusts forward. Anyway, yeah, I think it'll be a good game, but I think that's going to be a tough matchup for two. I personally think there'll be a split, whether it's a point split or a Barca win at home and you win at home. But, you know, we'll just have to see. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, definitely. So I might as well just finish off the matches, teams in our group. Bayern win 2-0 against Barcelona. I will admit Barcelona did play fairly well, despite it being, of course, we all know, Bayern. They tried to get things going on the counterattack, but obviously with being Bayern, they were just overpowered. This match was closer than in my opinion would have been normally if Robert Lewandowski was still on this team. So if Robert was still on this team, we all know the score would have been way higher than it was. So I think just the loss of Robert Lewandowski, even though they still have a great team in Bayern, kind of like weakened them just a little bit, but not by much. Because, I mean, we've talked about how great Bayern is and what this team is capable of. So, but Barcelona literally did. I actually watched this match, so they did perform very well despite this team that they were going up against. They were trying to when they had a chance to get the ball on a defensive situation, they tried to string a really strong counterattack, but obviously Bayern's defense was right there to take the ball right back from them. And then they just tried everything they could, but Bayern overpowered them, and it just saw Bayern get another 3 points. Pretty much the team that I will suspect will be the only team that will get maximum points. But overall, Barcelona cannot be mad. They actually held off for a very good amount of time for a while. So it just shows how strong Barcelona has gotten, even though we all know that situation.
Fuck them, but they have a great team. You can't say they don't. They're fucking fantastic. I was saying in general.
Why am I not surprised that you would interrupt me right in the middle of my thought?
Sorry, go ahead.
Hang on. I got to throw another dollar in the coin jar for that. Boink. Okay, I'm a millionaire now. Just kidding. But I mean, overall, I mean, yeah, screw them on how they got their players, but they still have a solid team, and the way they were able to compose themselves despite the situation just shows how great this Barcelona is in themselves. But yeah, I mean, in the end, it just came down to Bayern being Bayern and doing what they do is overpowering the opposition.
Yeah, but be honest. It was nice to see Leroy Sané twisting a team inside out that didn't have blue shirts on. Be honest.
True.
Because he did the Sané thing. He did the same thing against Inter. Not the first goal, but the own goal, the second goal of that the first game against Bayern Munich. It looked very similar, just the way he sort of did it. And obviously that was an incredible moment. But no, Barcelona played great. They got themselves in dangerous positions constantly during the early part of the game. I wouldn't say didn't take advantage of the opportunities, but Neuer wasn't playing games. I think the wanting to be Robert is part of it. And it's not that they dislike him, but they know what their team would be if he had not left. Because you look at the attacking options they have, Kingsley Coman, Leroy Sané, Serge Gnabry, Sadio Mane, and more, and Jamal Musiala and others. Now, if Robert didn't leave, they would have had to cancel the Champions League. Because it would have just been obvious. Well, not obvious, but they would have been overwhelming favorites. Erling Haaland could have scored 99 goals in the Champions League and Bayern still would have won it with Robert Lewandowski. So I think they just felt extra motivated for that moment. And yes, they get it there in the end. Bayern just end up owning Barcelona. But the performance from Barcelona was very optimistic. They can feel good about it. They can go and maybe potentially get a point off them in Barcelona. And obviously the two games against Inter are huge for Barcelona as well. But I think Barcelona should feel not hard done by, because I think ultimately Bayern did deserve to win the game in the end. But the way they started was excellent, and it was just Neuer kind of keeping them out. And eventually that ball comes over the top. Lucas Hernandez back in the net. And then they built on that with a lot of work from the midfield, from the attacking areas. Jamal Musiala doing an exceptional job again. And then Leroy Sané, who kind of lives for these types of moments, I feel. Champions League games. We remember the carousel mobile that he put against Lazio, which was one of his poetry in motion to a certain extent. I know that was a few years ago, but he always shows up for the games like these, and I thought he was terrific as well. And Bayern just ultimately pull away and get there in the end, but it wasn't like they dominated or they humiliated them. It was a very close game. And on another night, it could have gone a different way. If it wasn't in Munich, perhaps it goes a different way. But Bayern did what they were supposed to do, which was beat Barcelona and get their little revenge on Robert. Unfortunately, the record that's now been set in this matchup doesn't do justice to how well Barcelona actually did perform. Since so in 2015, Barcelona beat Bayern Munich in the Champions League semifinal first leg. Leo Messi dropped Jerome Boateng in that game. That's what it's kind of famous for. Since that game, so that was the first leg of the Champions League semifinal. Since that game, Barca in the matchup, Bayern are 19-4 have scored 19 goals and have conceded 4, and they haven't lost since. Isn't that crazy? And I know Barcelona played well, but that's historic. Mischievous. Yeah, that's just next level. Bayern did deserve to win this game in the end, and they get there in the end. But Barcelona did play very well. But it's something about this matchup that Bayern they're just able to win games like this. And against Barcelona, they have a great track record, and ever since 2015. It is flawless, and they're also unbeaten in their last 30 group games. It actually might be wins. It might be 30 straight wins in the group stages of the Champions League. But
damn,
it's either wins or unbeaten in 30. I don't remember. I read the stat yesterday, but I don't recollect what it is. But yeah, this was an incredible match, and Bayern get the job done, but Barcelona should feel confident going into Inter Milan when we return.
Definitely. I'm going to go with one of our German boys to kind of like change things up. The first one that comes to mind is Eintracht Frankfurt 1, Marseille 0. Eintracht Frankfurt, this match, in my opinion, was very back and forth. It could have gone either way just with how good these teams were performing, but Eintracht Frankfurt really get the point here and get the 3 points. I gotta check because something really
they're not doing well in the Bundesliga, if that's your question.
No, I was just checking like how they did in their first match, and they ended up losing against Sporting. But overall, the comeback and get 3 points after losing against Sporting last week. But they just aren't doing that well within the Bundesliga. And they're kind of having a little bit of struggles going on in the Champions League as well. But overall, they get the 3 points here. So overall, very well done.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to Wolfsburg this weekend, so that just tells you
the state of affairs.
How not great they are. And again, I'll take the win all day long, but still. and they're not doing terrible. They're not going to be relegated, but for a team that are Europa League champions, reigning Europa League champions, they should be doing better. But unfortunately, I think it's Roma's Roma 2.0, aka Marseille, because they have like 6 former Roma players on their team.
Damn.
I don't know. It might not be 6, but they have Cenk Özdemir, they have Paul Lopez. I think they still have Kevin Strootman. There's several former Roma players on Marseille. Oh, Jordan Veretout is on there too. So they got a lot of Roma players, former Roma players. No, this Marseille is outside of PSG, are the second best team in France. They are a team that have tradition in this competition. So even if they don't do what is expected, they're expected to show up and battle until the end. I think that this is worst case scenario. You lost to a Frankfurt team that couldn't beat a Wolfsburg side that doesn't know how to score goals. So I think it's really a black mark on Marseille more than anything else. They were close against Spurs in match day one, and they ended up losing that one at the end. So I think there's serious concerns for Marseille. Frankfurt get 3 points here. but I think it's still going to be quite difficult the rest of the way, because so Sporting is in their group, Spurs are in their group, and then who else is in their group? Is it just so Sporting, Spurs?
Hang on, I got this.
It's Sporting, Spurs, Marseille, and Frankfurt, because there's only four teams.
Yep.
Okay. The Spurs are Spursy. That's what happens when they just lost to Sporting FC. Antonio Conte's track record in the Champions League is not good. I mean, he's won less than 10 games in the Champions League as a coach. But you know, that's still a loaded team. You're still going to have to play them. You're going to have to play Sporting, who looks like the team to be in the group. And in the end, I think Marseille has dug themselves in a hole. But at the same time, Frankfurt should be grateful for the points, but I still think it's going to be difficult for them to qualify. But yeah, that's really all I have to say about the Eagles.
Okay, the last match that took place on Tuesday, before we get into the ones that occurred yesterday, for me, this one was not necessarily a shocker, but it is alarming for the team that I'm going to be talking to. We're going to be talking about Atletico Madrid versus Bayer Leverkusen. Definitely great win for Leverkusen. But I kind of expect the real takeaway for me from this match was I expected more from Atletico Madrid, especially with the talent that they also have on their team. I think you have João Félix, who I believe is still there.
João Félix, Morata, Marcus Llorente. Who else do they have? Your favorite player in the world, Rodrigo De Paul. Molina, who played for Udinese last year. Yannick Carrasco. I mean, it's loaded top to back. Dominguez in defense. Oblak, still one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Angel Carrera. Yeah, so you get the point. They're loaded.
Yeah, so a team has Atletico Madrid losing against Bayer Leverkusen, who may not have had necessarily the best start in Bundesliga. Just took, in my opinion, kind of took them to school. Obviously, Atletico did what they could, but it just wasn't good enough. And I don't know where they sit in the league at the moment, but this is fifth.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, not bad, but I mean, it's just another mediocre season for them, because usually they finish in like the top five usually. So, but it's just not a good look for them at the moment. Who did they play last week in their group?
They won late at Porto.
Yeah,
Antoine they won Griezmann, Mister, I'm only allowed to play 30 minutes a game. Antoine Griezmann scored the winner at the very end against Porto. Which was a crazy, because Porto, Atletico Madrid scored first, and then Porto scored a penalty, and then Atletico Madrid scored at the end. And all three of the goals that happened in that game were in the 90th minute or beyond. So it went from 0-0 to 2-1 in 4 minutes in their first game.
So, yeah, I mean, it took them until a last-minute winner in order to get the result done. But, I mean, it is kind of what you get when you have a manager who, I mean, he's great, but he kind of plays more that, I guess, the defensive style of football, which doesn't really get the results needed to move forward. And it kind of showed here, whereas Leverkusen not only plays defensively, but you're used to seeing that German style in-your-face attacking football. So, where, to me, Bundesliga has more of the more balanced of the two of worlds, like defense and offense, kind of like work together in harmonious harmony. Okay, that is the most dumbest shit I've said all day. But
go ahead. I want to tell you something, but just finish your thought.
But Definitely, it just wasn't a good look for Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, agreed. Just so you know, Spanish football is also extremely attacking minded. They're what I would call I don't know, it depends, but I think they're counterattacking. Is their specialty in terms of attacking football. The styles of German football and Spanish football are very similar, which is interesting because, and I don't, I mean this with the most utter respect for Bayer Leverkusen, at least at points last season and during the campaign this season, it's almost anti-German football because they don't play a really open and flea throwing attacking style. They attack, but it's not like they don't attack with like their hair's on fire, you know? So it's a combination between defending and attacking and slow build up and then hitting the spaces and executing. And of course they can get into these big games where they can score loads and they can thread it up. And obviously, with Schick, Diaby, and others in the attacking spaces, they're effective and they attack from the outside. But they're the style of play from it's they don't like they just don't attack the way a Dortmund will attack, a Leipzig or a Bayern. Do you get what I'm saying? Or am I making sense?
Yeah, you're making sense.
Okay, I just want to make sure. So I'm not saying they don't attack, but they don't attack the way a lot of the top teams in Germany do attack. And they're having by the way, they're not just having a bad season; they're having a horrific season. They couldn't beat Hertha Berlin, and they're in the relegation zone. Now, will they stay in the relegation zone? Probably not. But still. Anyway, yes. So on one hand, Leverkusen get the win. It's important that they get there in the end. They get the goals. And to me, it's circumstance for Atletico Madrid of them not taking chances when they come. Look, I don't think you can pin this on Diego Simeone. The reason is, yes, is he does he play defensive football? Yes, he does. But you know that's got him, I think, several league titles, a European trophy. Been to two Champions League finals and is one of the top teams in La Liga. He won a La Liga title when it was with Messi, but pre Neymar, sorry, pre Suarez, but Messi, Suarez, and the juggernaut that exists in Barcelona, Benzema, Bale, and Ronaldo at Real Madrid. He won a La Liga season in that era. With his style of football. So it can work, but if you're going to play that way, his players need to take the chances when they come. And there are games where it's wide open and they attack freely. But in a game like this, sometimes a European night, he just uses his team differently. But when he does that, it's on his players to take the chances. And they had plenty of chances. They just didn't take them. And then obviously then Leverkusen get their two goals after they failed to hit the mark in the attack and I'm not worried about Atletico Madrid. I still think they'll qualify, but it doesn't give me comfort knowing that it took them until the very end against Porto, and Porto was just they were just brainwashed and assassinated in their backyard by Club Brugge. That was a weird thing to say, but you get what I'm saying.
Where the
I have no
hell
idea. Just it was the first thing that came to my head.
Jeez. But yeah, I mean, so far, so those that concludes the matches that took place on Tuesday, but yesterday we had some really good juicy ones. We had Milan winning 3-1 against Dynamo Zagreb. This just shows that, I mean, Dynamo Zagreb is a decent team within their own league, but when it comes to facing teams outside of that, they kind of tend to struggle a little bit more. And it was the case against Milan, who I'm just, as Elliot stated, Serie A has not looked good with the top teams at the moment. We just look like everybody else.
We all look like shit.
Yeah. We look like what's the term that the young people use these days? Steaming hot garbage.
You know what it is to me now?
What?
It's whoever has the best individual players can win the league. So if Dybala's the best player, Roma wins the league. If Lautaro's the best player, Inter win the league. If Liao is the best player, Milan win the league. If Georgia guy is the best player, Napoli wins the league. Because it's like nobody... they're going to win trophies with Allegri. we'll get onto Juventus in a second. Vladovic, who's a scoring machine, half of his goals have come from free kicks. He doesn't put his team. We'll get onto Juventus, but the point is, I think it's going to improve. And this last week was much better than the weeks before that. But it does feel like the individuals will make the difference, and rather than the team. But anyway, go on.
Obviously, Milan were the stronger side from top to bottom. Dynamo Zagreb was just overpowered. Obviously, they get a consolation goal, but it doesn't really do much when you're trying to get out of the group stage.
They won the first game against Chelsea, though, so it's not end of the world. They still have a good chance to qualify, I'm just saying.
Yeah, so, but against a Serie A team that is the reigning title defenders, they definitely were not going to go down. They were just going to fire off cylinders, and they can show that here. It just shows that even though we're not doing great at the moment within the league itself, it's in the European sector, there's a lot of good matches going on with the Italian sides, and this was just another case of that, where Milan just came out with the bag and just took them to school. And they get the 3 points, they get a 3-1 victory, and that's all she wrote on that one.
Yeah, Milan looked good. Zagreb didn't look bad, though. They looked pretty sick for much of the game. They were just, teams like Zagreb don't have the capacity to some of these teams, but it was the type of players that score for Milan, not ones that are getting on the score sheet every day other than Giroud. I thought they played a good game. I thought Zagreb did what they could and eventually, but it wasn't enough. I still think they beat Chelsea. If they beat Chelsea, they can beat Salzburg. So I think Zagreb should feel that they can still qualify. They're second in the group right now. They have Milan. It has 4 points. They have 3. They're 1 point behind Milan. And I think they can get results in this group to go into the round of 16, which would be awesome, given what's happening in that part of the country, or what has been happening at that part of the country, that part of the globe, in the last year and a half or whatever the case may be. So it's not Ukraine, but it's relatively close by. So I think it was a good performance, but Milan were just a bit better. But you know, my man Orsic on the score sheet again. If you want a good bet this season for the Champions League, Orsic to score is pretty pretty bang on. He scored 2 in a row. I think he'll score in all the group games potentially, and probably had one of the best goals of the Champions League week. Really nice cut into the box, curls it around. The defender was a really well put goal. He's such a top player, and I don't think people really understand how good he actually is. But he's still in Zagreb, so a lot of people aren't totally aware. But he's a guy who could be playing in any of these leagues, and he's absolutely top class. But AC Milan get the job done, and none of the Italian teams looked great. Maybe Napoli's looked pretty decent, but especially in the Liverpool game, but they looked pretty good against Rangers. But Milan didn't look amazing, but they did enough.
Yeah, definitely. Another Italian team that we're going to be discussing right now is Napoli with their 3-1 win, I mean 3-0 win against Rangers. I mean, there's really not a lot of key takeaways from this one. Where, obviously, Rangers have struggled with in the respective group. They lost against, I do believe it was Ajax
in that group. Lost Ajax. Yeah,
so it seems that the Scottish sides are having a little bit of a difficult time. Although that I will admit, Celtic, their main rivals, did get a draw, but just overall, Scottish teams within the past few years have had real bad luck in European competitions. And the string of that seems to be continuing this season. So it's not, the main takeaway is just they were just overpowered again by an Italian side or a team outside of the Scottish Premiership, and they just got dominated.
Okay, that's fair, but I can't say they always struggle in Europe because they made the Europa League final and went into penalty. So that's a coin flip from winning silver on a European scale. But yeah, Napoli, well done. You beat the worst team in the group with a -7 goal difference.
Damn.
Happy birthday. Yeah, good job. I mean, yeah, you won the game. It was good. It took you too long to score. You didn't look down. You looked good, but you didn't look amazing. You didn't look like you did against Liverpool. You still look solid. You still get the points. I'll give you credit for that. Raspadori on the score sheet again. One of their other signings this season scored one of the other goals. Yeah, they look strong, but I don't think there is any real legitimacy in what we saw. Just because it's a legitimate victory, but it doesn't teach us anything. We didn't learn anything from the performance. And yes, they sit top of the group. They have two big wins. The Liverpool game was amazing. They played so well in that game and absolutely ripped them to shreds. I would say it's not going to go that way at Anfield. And now they're going to have to play Ajax twice, who almost got a point off Liverpool, despite very little action on goal. So they're going to have to play them in Amsterdam, and they're going to have to play them in Naples. And I don't think that's as easy as people think. You can say, Ajax sold their whole team. They did. But Ajax always sells sells a good portion of their squad, and they always are still good. They lost their coach, that's what happens. But they're still a proper club, a threat in this group, and I would still say that they have a very good chance of advancing into the next round. Napoli should feel confident that they can do this so as well. It's going to be tough, actually. After the way Liverpool won that game against Ajax at home, I don't think they're going to struggle much more in this group anymore. I do think they'll probably advance. Napoli have 6 points, but it's only 2 games. There's a long way to go. They look good. They look sharp. They, all respect and credit to Napoli until Serie A starts, and then fuck you guys. No. Obviously, I don't want Napoli to do well. I just don't. But they've done very well, and they deserve the credit that they're getting now. But I think we need to see Amsterdam. We saw what they did to Liverpool, amazing. The Amsterdam battle, the battle with Ajax is gonna determine who finishes this group. I would, I think it's better for the teams in the Europa League if Ajax are not in it. So it's going to be tough. But for teams in the Europa League who are looking to advance and try to win the trophy, Ajax will be a problem for them, where Napoli won't be as big of a problem. So in that sense, you would want Napoli to do well, you want Ajax to do well so you can avoid them in the Europa League. But yeah, it's going to be between. I still think it's an open race for all three, but Napoli look good. Rangers are going to get beaten by everybody. But we'll see where we stand in after the next match day.
Yeah, definitely. Up next we have Real Madrid winning 2-0 against another German team of RB Leipzig. Leipzig, we've known how they've been doing this season along with Real Madrid. Real Madrid overpowered Leipzig for majority of this match, but RB Leipzig did try to get some things going here and there, but wasn't able to really do much because obviously we know how stacked Real Madrid are as a team and how aggressive they play. And it was another typical Real Madrid showcase in this match where they fired on all cylinders. Anytime Leipzig tried to get some attack going, the defense was like, not today, Satan. Got the ball back, set up the strong counters, but not to, not give the roses to Leipzig. They did defend fairly well, with the exception of those two goal scenarios. But in the end, you're going up against Real Madrid, who won the Champions League last year and has
14 times.
Yeah, and has won it 14 times. And so it's going up against a team that has had such strong success in this competition. It's going to be difficult. But Leipzig did do what they could, but it was just the overpowerment of Real Madrid and their historic success within the competition that got them.
Yes. Madrid were excellent. They look great. But Leipzig did not look bad. They were battling with Madrid. They went coast to coast with them every couple minutes. It was an incredible performance. It's hard to say incredible. It was a great performance for a team that lost. You know, Dominic Tesco is an outstanding manager, but I think the switch to Marco Rose has worked out. This weekend they go to Dortmund at home, beat the living crap out of them. They come here, they do well against the European champions. Now again, they get there in the end. I thought they did well thoroughly throughout that game, but they just don't have the same type of game changers that exist with Luka Modric, Toni Kroos, Ballon d'Or soon to be winner, Karim Benzema, Vinicius Jr., and Ernesto Valverde, who's actually, hold on, not Ernesto Valverde, Federico Valverde. Sorry, split up there. And they looked excellent. They got the goals when they needed to. Carlo Ancelotti is going to win another La Liga this season. I think, again, we don't know what the luck of the draw is going to be when we hit the knockouts. I think if the balls go in our direction, it should be a pathway to Madrid and Munich in the final, which should be the final because those are the two biggest teams in history. So I would love to see those two dog it out in the final. But like I said, I always say, and it's documented that Bayern are the best team in the world, but Madrid are just as good. Those two teams are just on another level. And when you have a team that wins the way they do, because remember, Barcelona played really well. Munich came up and delivered when they needed to. Leipzig played really well, but then Madrid comes up and wins when they needed to at the end. But I think it was a great performance nonetheless by Leipzig. They just couldn't contend with the experience of winning that Madrid have. Unbelievable strike by almost did it again, Federico Valverde, and then obviously they get another one at the end to seal it. Although Valverde did look, he celebrated as if I told him he couldn't do it. That's how he was like so intense. It's a celebration. Just for the record, Valverde, I thought you could do it. You don't have to get mad, but it was just his reaction was so intense that he just acted as if somebody said he can't score goals. But obviously Real Madrid get there in the end. They're still in control of their own destiny. They're still top of the group. And I think they're going to glide to a qualification for the round 16, which we all expect.
Yeah, definitely. One of the Italian teams that kind of struggled, even though they did perform decent, Juventus lose 2-1 against Benfica. Let me check something here really quick before I say something. Okay. Obviously, in the beginning, first 4 minutes, you had Milik starting things out with a bang within the first 4 minutes of the match, giving Juventus the 1-0 lead. And then in the first half, in the 43rd minute, there was a penalty given to Benfica, where they were able to convert the penalty, so things
Who scored the penalty?
That's for you.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Ciao, Mario. Heart reacts for you, buddy.
Shit for Inter, but still, I saw Inter fans celebrating. That was great. It was like Derby d'Italia, but this time, he's wearing a Benfica jersey.
I mean,
anyway, continue.
And then, of course, within the second half, David Neres.
If you want I can give you a little fun fact on David Neres if you want.
Okay, fun fact me.
All right. So last year, do you remember the Ajax team that ripped apart Madrid and went on those incredible runs to semifinal?
Yes.
He was one of the players on that team that ended up leaving a little later. And in the Juventus games, he scored in both of the legs. Just to give you some context, there was that game when De Ligt and everybody was at Ajax, it Ronaldo versus all that stuff. Ronaldo had scored, and then Neres had scored, and then he scored again he may have only scored one goal, but he was one of the reasons Juventus got knocked out in Turin a couple years ago. Again, another Juventus killer comes up to the rescue again.
Yeah, but obviously, even though these teams were playing fairly close, the edge went to statistically in various areas to Benfica. They did very well keeping Juventus on their toes, and obviously, our boy Nico is fuming with how Allegri is an old, washed up dinosaur who is sick and tired of seeing them play more of a defensive state of football. I think in his first run, Allegri was a little bit more attacking minded, but he won though. But now this style of play with the players that he has just does not work. So but congratulations to Benfica, who kept them going after the first goal, were able to get back into it and solidify themselves the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, Juventus look like crap. They've drawn I don't know how many games in a row in the league. It's really alarming to see how bad they are. You know, when your top striker Vladovic was scoring for fun in Florence, then comes back, starts scoring, and then this season hasn't really hit the ground running because he's not put in positions to be successful and positions to score. Allegri is different than it was, my friend. You do not have Marchisio, Andrea Pirlo, Arturo Vidal anymore. You don't have Mario Mandzukic, Cristiano Ronaldo up top. You don't have Bonucci. Well, you have Bonucci still, and Chiellini at their peak. So all of what they've done here, nobody gets better under him. And he's getting away. He's not, you know, he's not a good manager anymore. And it's because of the circumstances of his team have changed. He got to two Champions League finals, and at his peak, maybe he was something. He was a very good coach at his peak, but that is not the case anymore. He's got to go. They don't have a choice. They need to make this decision before it gets any worse. When you have had started this campaign the way that they have. You just so you know, Juventus have never lost two Champions League games in a row in their 100-plus year history. So Allegri, congrats on your new record. Benfica, yeah, I think Benfica are in their second this group. I think as long as Neymar puts on the number 10 jersey, PSG finishes top. And I think Benfica will finish second. I don't know. The thing is, this sounds crazy, but Maccabi Tel Aviv looked good against PSG. They led against PSG. And there's a possibility that they will get something from those games. Juventus needs to win both of those games, and I think if they don't, Allegri will be sacked. So I hope Juventus win the next two games because we need to keep him in the job. Because we don't want a serious manager like Zidane or Thomas Tuchel to come in Juventus and turn it around. We want them where they are. They're in a great spot right now, not really threatening any of the rest of us. We've been total shit, all of us, but not as we've been crap. Juve has been shit. So I want Allegri to continue to get backed and stay in the job, because the second something changes, Juventus will be much more difficult than previously anticipated. But I do think Benfica, PSG will go through, and Maccabi might be able to beat them once. And I think that would be great. But obviously, as a team that wants to win in Italy, I want Juve to keep Allegri in house.
My brain went to the weird side just for a minute while you were talking. To the tune of Bernie, Allegri was a dinosaur at the cost of Juventus fans' frustration, and when he finally leaves, he'll have a celebration.
Alright.
My brain needs therapy, but we all know that's never gonna work. But anyway, normally with the Europa League, I would be able to go with more talk about all the matches, but due to being short for time, I will be talking about the main match here and then the main match for one of the Italian teams in the Europa League. And then
the Roma game, and we can talk about Lazio getting humiliated. And then we got to talk about Dortmund before we head.
Yeah, definitely. First, we'll just start off with, since I'm there, Man City defeat Dortmund 2-1. Masterclass from Erling Haaland. I mean, he is just on a whole other level with this team. Obviously, the deadlock would be broken. With Jude Bellingham, who has been a absolute baller for Dortmund for quite a few seasons.
What a player he is. My God.
I know. He is an amazing athlete. Like, damn. But he got the deadlock broken, giving Dortmund the 1-0 lead. But then you had in the 80th minute, obviously, this is Man City. They weren't going to be denied points here. It didn't matter where the points come from, but they mustered a goal where John Stones levels things off 1-1, and then just 4 minutes later, masterclass from Erling Haaland. He continues to put in the work. I mean, we saw what he did with the main storyline is we saw what he did with being at Dortmund, but now you're seeing what he can do with this Manchester City team. Definitely, we dominant team in this match was Man City from top to bottom in all areas. 12 shots, 3 on target, 66% possession, 709 passes, and pass accuracy of 89%. But you obviously, Man City definitely is one of the best teams in their group. And it continues to show why Man City are a force to be reckoned with, not just within European competitions, but in the league in general. But it just stems from just another, I would say, obscure performance from Dortmund. I mean,
I don't know, man. Can I just go real quick, if you don't mind?
Okay, I'm tagging you in.
All right, I think you got this wrong. All right, you're my friend. I love you. You're a great partner. Dortmund were excellent. Man City were horrible for most of the game. The reason they got the points was because Erling Haaland had an incredible moment and scored a goal. John Stones had an incredible moment and also scored the goal. You know, those stats are nice to look at, and every Man City game ever recorded will look like that, because that's the way they play football. And when you have Erling Haaland, who's, by the way, incredible player, there was a stat that came up that if he keeps his pace, he'll score 63 goals in the Premier League. And on the bottom, it had like a list of all those stats. He's on pace for 99 goals this season. He's not going to get 99 goals this season, but he's incredible. That scissor kick kind of looked like Zlatan a bit, an unbelievable strike. However, if Dortmund had a goalie in goal and not some guy who spent most of an actual goalie that's done it on a top level, if Gregory Kobel is available to play this game, Man City don't score either goal. The goalkeeping performance is the big reason that Man City won this game, because both of them are savable. The Haaland touch was immaculate, but a decent goalkeeper could have saved that. Maybe not. Maybe that one goes in, but the first goal, there's no excuse for that. It was just an absolute joke in goal. As far as Dortmund played extremely well for most of the game. I thought they I wouldn't say dominated the game, but they were in control for large parts of it. On another day, and if they had a different striker up top for City, I do think that Dortmund would have won. It was a bad performance. But this is why City are so great and so dangerous, because they can play badly and still win. They haven't been great this season at all, actually. It is Erling Haaland's individual brilliance that's doing it, and it does it here again. In Manchester, they get the results, and that's the important thing. But I don't think that Man City played well at all. And I think if Erling Haaland didn't come from the underworld of talent and ability, and if there was something not in the water in Norway, then they win this game. Dortmund does, but he's an absolute machine. He's going to score goals. And I felt bad for Dortmund because they played really well, and Bellingham specifically for me stood out as being the standout performer. But again, Man City are so good that they just need one or two moments to do it. And unfortunately, Dortmund gave it to them. But that's just my take.
Yeah, and the two matches that we're going to talk about quickly in the Europa League. First, we're going to talk about the thrashing of Elliot's rivals, Lazio, losing 5-1 against Midland. I'm just going to let you unleash on this one first, because I need a moment.
Lazio, you're very slow. You're very bad. You suck.
Tell me how you feel.
Well, there's a stand-up thing. This guy was talking about how Asian parents would get a pep talk, but it would be negative. And the line is, you're very slow. You can't run. You suck. yeah. You, okay. If Feyenoord put five past you, Six pass. Okay, that's even if Feyenoord does this to Lazio. All right. Yeah. Is it embarrassing? Absolutely. Is it the end of the world? No. They lost to a team that, again, respect to them. They deserved it. But you know, if you're Lazio, you cannot put this performance together against that team. Now, again, if it looks better if it's Feyenoord, but this wasn't Feyenoord. That's the only losable game in the group, and they lost by five. They lost by four. And it could have been six because they missed a penalty. So it just absolute humiliation and embarrassment. Fiorentina and Lazio get to sit on the loser bench for two absolutely abomination of a performance for both of them. And it's funny to me because I'm a Roma fan, but it's a bad look in general because this isn't some chump coaching that team. This has arguably the best player in Italy on the team, and one of the a very consistent coach that's done it on a high level. It's totally humiliation, and Sarri's gonna smoke himself a pack of cigarettes tonight.
Damn. But yeah, this is just a total embarrassing thing from Lazio. I mean, Milan, they're a decent team, but Lazio, we would normally expect something more from them because of the quality that they do have, or what quality they supposedly have. But obviously, they have a decent manager. So, just this is unacceptable from a Serie A side. They played like crap. And if they go up against Feyenoord and they perform like this, they'll become a laughingstock within in the Europa League. And it's just not a good look especially with how bad Serie A is at the moment, as like all of our teams have no clue what they're doing except Juventus, which is playing like terrible right now. But just overall, totally dismal performance, and they just need to get their heads out of their butts and see if they can get anything else from the rest of this competition, or they'll be going home. And the last match we're going to talk about, and then after this, I will be plugging something in. But before that, we will be talking about Roma winning 3-0 against HJK, whatever their full name is. I have no idea.
Helsinki. They're from Finland. I guess I'll go first on this. I don't have too much to say because it's very, very self-explanatory. Great performance. After what happened in Bulgaria, they needed a reaction. They needed a performance to really show that they're still should be the favorites in this group. Helsinki doesn't have the ball much. It is in their half most of the time. Roma have a quick few chances, and then they're reduced to 10 men. Helsinki is. To be honest, though, I don't think it should have been a red card. I think they had to figure out whether or not it was a clear cut goal scoring opportunity when Belotti had the ball. I would say he could have scored from that position, but I don't think it's clear as day. And if you're going to send someone off, it's clear. It should be clear as day. However, if they play with 11 men or 12 men, they still lose. They go into the second half. They really press them and all that stuff and do an exceptional job. Zaniolo's back into the team. And he played very, very well. He's such a gifted player and can do so many things well, except scoring and shooting. but that's going to improve with time. And he's dealt with some injuries, but he looks exceptional in creative areas and facilitating opportunities for Roma. And I said at the beginning of the season, when Julian was on, I said that I need 8 goals from him. I don't need 15 to 20, just 8. And honestly, I just need 6. because all the other things he does is really effective to the team. And then obviously we go into the second half, goalless. Dybala's brought on. 70 seconds in, Roma score the first goal. Really beautiful. Zaniolo to Spinazzola comes into the box. Pellegrini with a good tap to set up Dybala, hits it into the bottom corner. Then 2 minutes later, Roma on the attack again. This time it is Zaniolo hits a really well put ball into the box. It deflects a little bit, hits into the chest of Pellegrini, goes into the back of net. And then Andrea Belotti, another attack by Roma, cleans it off and finishes the job with his first goal in his new colors. And Roma get the 3 points. And they will have two matches with Real Betis in Spain and then in Rome. And I think both of those games are going to be tough. But I think by the end of these two games, Roma could be top of the group. And I think Roma, after this win, will be in position to qualify. And they make amends for what happened in Bulgaria. And it's exactly what the type of performance Roma need to go into a tough game this weekend against Atalanta.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to take away that, with the exception of Roma are able to continue to prove why they're one of the best teams one of the few teams in European competition that, even though they struggle at times, do well in certain scenarios such as this. Obviously, you have Dybala getting on, being started off, and then you also had Spinazzola working his magic, and then you just had a lot of good things stringed up within that second half to get those 3 points. Obviously, you're definitely gonna qualify, and Lazio, you may want to get out. I'm just gonna say, Lazio, you may want to get out some pen and paper and take notes on actually how to win a game in the Europa League. I'm just saying.
One year they played Salzburg in the second leg. They had a 4-1 lead or something like that, and they lost the game in 22 minutes. Salzburg scored 4 goals and they lost, I think, 7-4 on aggregate. So if you want to know what Lazio does in Europe, that's what they do in Europe. They choke.
Hashtag bottle jobs. But yeah, I mean, this is why Roma continue to be one of the a solid team throughout. But I mean, there's really not much. Really quick before I plug the thing, Donkey of the Week and Super, I guess MVP, I'll call it.
Dybala, player of the week, good tonight, good on the weekend. This might be a stretch, but I would say at this moment, if we're talking about the player of this season in Serie A, I think he's leading the race right now. And then Donkey of the Week, I guess the goalkeeper from Dortmund. I mean, they probably win the game if it's not for him. So
my MVP would also be Dybala for the same reasons, and my Donkey of the Week goes to Lazio for putting on that terrible performance. Okay, I'm gonna plug this thing in really quick. For those of you who don't know, obviously when me and Elliot do this podcast, we are really kind of like strapped for time on certain things because of my work schedule and having to be up early in the morning. But if you really want a podcast that goes even further in depth on certain matches and certain scenarios, such as obviously the Barcelona situation and other various topics, Elliot, my wonderful podcast partner over here, just started his solo podcast called The Football Tap, where he goes even further into some of the matches, really deep diving into like the tactical side of things and like really giving his take on certain situations that are surrounding certain leagues and stuff and certain scenarios, such as the Salernitana controversy. Also, he went on a really nice rant on the Barcelona subject, which was a best rant ever. Good job.
Yeah, and if you're interested to know what's happening with Liverpool and some certain questions that are being asked, I made a comparison to early Theo Hernandez at AC Milan and Trent now. I suggest that maybe it's time to move Trent into midfield. So obviously the Premier League is a very hot topic in a lot of places, and I know people who listen to this or who support us love the Premier League, so that's something you'd be check out. And I kind of talked about a bunch of Champions League stuff as well.
So yeah, if you want more of an in-depth analysis, deeper than we usually go here, definitely go check out the Football Tap. You can listen to it on mostly Spotify, but if you want
audio, you can listen to it on Anchor, Spotify. If you watch it on Spotify, it's an actual video, and you can see me move my hands and stuff.
So yeah, definitely check that out. But for now, that's all she wrote. We'll see you guys back with our regularly scheduled podcast week, where Tuesday we talk Bundesliga and then Wednesday Serie A. And then once Champions League resumes, we'll resume our shows on Friday, where we're going to be able to do every single match that we have, since I won't have any time constraints. So without further ado, good night, ladies and gentlemen.